Thank you, Megan. Thanks, everyone. It's so nice to be here with you today. That was an incredible introduction, Christy. So much of what you said resonated with me. And I will say, at the Ford Foundation, this is not something that's happened in the last 2 years or even the last 10 years. It more for us feels like what we've been talking about internally now is really being picked up externally and repeated back to us. And ideas that we used to fund that were perhaps even considered fringe at the Ford Foundation are now much more in the mainstream. And the only things that, I mean, I can only offer theories, but I'll offer two for what it's worth. One is the all the work that's been done over the last, I would say, decade or two to diversify leadership at institutions, not just in our sector, but across the board. So diversifying boards and leadership teams, and even at organizations like Ford, it just took a long time to get to the point where our board and our executive leadership team was majority people of color, majority women, et cetera, and had representation from LGBTQI, trans, disability communities. And so I think there is a real difference that all of us feel who are in these positions, a different kind of imperative than perhaps some of our predecessors. And we are maybe louder about it and just don't let go as easily. And so some of the change happens because there's just different composition at those levels. And then the other piece that I'll offer, which I'm going to say, I'm speaking here, of course, in my personal capacity, not in my Ford capacity, but I don't want to be partisan anyway. But I will say the national conversation, the national rhetoric around race and nationalism and sex and immigration and all of those conversations during the last administration got to such a point that the backlash to me is not surprising, right? Like the fact that there was a really violent reaction and a really vehement reaction, and that people felt like they needed to take action because of the seriousness of that conversation and the danger in that rhetoric. To me, that's not surprising. And it's why the reaction to the George Floyd murder, I think, evolved the way it did in a way that the previous killings of people of color have not. So those are just two thoughts. And I'd of course love to hear from you, Ricardo.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's great to be here today with all of you. It has been a very challenging time for, I think, organizations all around the country. And in fact, I think all around the world, because as Megan mentioned, the IRC is a very large humanitarian assistance organization with operations in 40 countries, many cities in the United States. But we are predominantly in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Middle East. And in the US, we're in approximately 27 cities. So the DEI issue, as you might imagine, in a global organization like ours, is, if you think it's challenging in a purely domestic setting, you won't be surprised to learn that in a global setting, it's even much more challenging. And you have to really be quite careful about approaches that you take. So, one of my main functions as general counsel and as a leader of the IRC has been to pursue the DEI objectives robustly and with enormous commitment, while at the same time avoiding unintended consequences that might result from pursuing different courses of action. So just to give you one example, one of the very important initiatives that we undertook was to devise a demographic survey for our entire global organization, which consists approximately of 15,000 people worldwide. And the purpose of the demographic survey was to really get a better sense of who worked for us, what characteristics they had, so that we can then make sure that we address the concerns of everyone in the organization. The demographic survey, because of the global nature of our organization, took us many months to do, because among the questions that we could not ask in certain countries because it would endanger our staff were questions relating to LGBTQIA status. Some questions relating to religion could not be asked in certain jurisdictions. So in the end, we have 12 versions of the demographic survey because we needed to make sure we made the extra effort to revise and customize the surveys so that we would get everyone's information and at the same time not endanger them. So it was quite an exercise, but we were able to accomplish it. So that's just by way of example that a big part of all of our responsibility, really, as lawyers for an organization pursuing these really important issues, is to help the organization avoid these unintended consequences. And I can give you other examples as we move along.